lots of people like to write a 5 or a 10 year career plan. And so people that I've mentored along the way or talked to, I've always said, you don't need one of those. You just need to know in general, what do you love doing? What are you good at? And then find opportunities that keep building on that on the way.
Hello everyone, my name's Anna D'Souza and welcome to today's edition of NZX's Opening Bell podcast. In celebration of International Women's Week, I'm delighted to be joined by one of our very own impressive leaders, Anna Scott, CEO of SmartShares, an organisation within the NZX Group. Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
So Anna, not all of our listeners will maybe know about SmartShares, so maybe we could just start off with a little bit of background about who and what SmartShares is, really.
Yeah, sure. So I think SmartShares is a fund manager that is in the umbrella of the NZX Group. And some people definitely know what a fund manager is, others not. And so in that investment space, our job is to create product that people can invest in, and most likely those are funds. So those funds can be listed like an ETF, or they can be unlisted. And then how you access those can be directly through us or on the exchange, or you might have an advisor or a share broking account where you can buy those as well. And we also like to package those up into KiwiSaver solutions or with some of our corporate clients into a workplace savings or a corporate superannuation.
Perfect. So we'll come back to SmartShares in a little bit. So I guess I'd like to start by having a little bit of chat about yourself.
Yep.
Now, financial services, maybe not the most exciting industry. So, you know, I'm sure as a little girl, you weren't like, oh, that's where I want to be. What made you go down this kind of career pathway? You know, how did you end up here?
By accident. But I think that when I started, I really liked maths at school. And so when I wanted to go to university, that could have been a BSc. Or I had a father who was an engineer in civil, so that was building and construction things, which I wasn't so enthused about. But I did like the maths theme, and so I embarked on an engineering degree. And then in doing that, I think a lot of my career has just been being open to opportunities and what comes next. So my husband wanted to go, who's my boyfriend then, wanted to go to Europe to play rugby. So we ended up in London, and I applied for a job, and it happened to be at Chase Manhattan Bank. And that's how I got a first intro of what financial services even was. And it just kind of created a thirst for more, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's been my career path from there.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, the UK. Wow. I think you've also worked overseas in Malaysia as
yep.
well. So how does that experience compare to the UK, to New Zealand?
Very different culturally, I think. And it was a real eye-opener coming out of university and went there for the first 2 years. Loved it, actually got a taste for Asian food and for everything else. But it was also quite interesting when you think about diversity and inclusion, because different cultures there, someone else's country where we're not the the majority people. So to learn to live within that, and it was a different kind of diversity mix rather than your traditional male-female one. So loved it there, and I think has stood us in good stead for travelling the rest of the world as well.
Yeah. So how does New Zealand compare in some of those cultural changes and shifts as well?
I think it's different to each different area. When we came back to New Zealand, one of kind of the challenges was to fit back in again.
Yeah.
So 11 years overseas, 2 of those in Malaysia, 3 in London, and commuting back to New York. So very big cities with a lot of people. So one of the first things that was a real eye-opener was you got back and at 9 o'clock decided, oh, we might have dinner and there's just nothing open. Or, you know, the post office is closed on Saturday. So you really had to reframe what your work life looked like or the life balance in terms of just things that were open and accessible and how you fit it in.
Yeah, I guess very different opportunities, very different markets as
yeah.
well, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So I guess, you know, that overseas experience really kind of shaped who you are today. Were there any other key opportunities, decisions that you've made that you think have really shaped your career and your path?
Yeah, and look, I always think about my path and my career as a little bit like a lily pond. So you've got a pond and you want to get to the other side, kind of we all do, right? You want a successful career. But it's very difficult to build a bridge and just span the whole pond in one go. So when I look back on my career and even looking forward, I always think about that as you just step onto the first lily pad. And then once you're on that lily pad, you decide which one's next and which looks most appetizing or which is most available to you. And in general, you're heading in the right direction across the path, but to get to the other side of the pond, but you haven't charted that direction. And so for me, I think that's what my career has been about. In terms of there was an opportunity to go to Malaysia and then there was an opportunity to go to London looking for the right job And then within those companies, and particularly Chase Manhattan got merged and bought with JP Morgan, just being positioned to have done a really good job or to be visible or known. And then when things change, maybe people think of you or other opportunities open up and you just take the doors that are open.
Yeah. So being really open and accessing as many opportunities as you can.
Yeah, and I know lots of people like to write a 5 or a 10 year career plan. And so people that I've mentored along the way or talked to, I've always said, you don't need one of those. You just need to know in general, what do you love doing? What are you good at? And then find opportunities that keep building on that on the way.
Yeah, very interesting. So I guess you've kind of touched on it here a little bit in terms of mentorship and leadership. I guess, what does good leadership look like to you? And, you know, when you are mentoring, what is some of the advice that you pass on or share?
Yeah, so I've always tried to look and share what is my personal feeling. So when I look back at on my career in leadership, you obviously have a vast amount of different managers and higher up bosses and the way people run companies. But I have worked most of my career in financial services. And the fact is that historically that's quite a male-dominated, A-type personality type of environment. So what I've tried to bring to that is a little bit more of me. And I'm a real people person. So to me, leadership is really about communication. And that's listening as well as talking. But I also think it's about being clear in terms of desires and needs, but also for a company, clear direction. So it sounds quite trite, but I put a lot of it down to communication. And I think that a lot of issues in terms of getting things done or resolving conflicts or getting everyone to work together as a team come down to good communication. So I try and put that at the top of my list of leadership.
So I guess it's relying on the people around you to effectively communicate your message and the message within the organization as well.
Yeah, because I think lots of it is you've got to have the right people in the right jobs. And if you don't all talk and trust that you're sharing that burden and that load, then it gets, one, very lonely, but two, really difficult to get things done efficiently.
Now, you've touched on it a couple of times that, you know, and I think it is quite well established that financial services, quite a male-dominated industry. Have there been any unique challenges or obstacles that you've faced as you've gone through your career or as you've tried to make changes or communicate that you can share, you know?
So, you know, you're often the only female in the room and that just is a fact, and always welcome to see more females and to grow that. I think lots of time people talk about imposter syndrome and what that means. And look, where I've got to on that really is that when you're sitting in a room of people who are all trying to get something done, we all have a little bit of imposter syndrome. So what I've tried to focus on is, what am I bringing to this table with these people? Like, what do I think is the bit that I'm adding value to here? And then that becomes what I call my island of competence. So from there, you're not an imposter in your island of competence. You're the person who knows. So if you center around, okay, well, I've brought this value, and then figure out what the other pieces of value everyone else is bringing, then I think that helps kind of buoy up that imposter feeling into what you are actually bringing. And then you build from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess they say lean in and, you know, really embracing what it is that you bring to the table.
Yeah. And look, it would be awesome to have more women involved at more senior positions. Mm. And, you know, there's no magic wand to do that overnight. So I think that part of that, you know, how do you get more women into that space? How do you do that? I think that comes down to a lot of that people side too. Mm-hmm. So where I've had it be work for me successfully, and where I've tried to pass that on is a lot about succession planning. Mm-hmm. So if you have any leader open to the idea that they're not there forever and what does succession planning look like, and I think if you talk about that as a group, then naturally you're going to identify the next level of people, and that should open up good women as well as good men. And so then you're talking about pathways for everyone. But if you do it consciously and you do try and identify where your good people are, then you're trying to actively chart a pathway for those good women rather than leaving it up to them making it for themselves or something randomly happening and opening it up.
Yeah, I guess not everyone has the self-belief or the ability to kind of grasp onto those opportunities as well. So, you know, you are, as a leader, taking a little bit of ownership of that. It can help open up those paths for them as well.
Yeah, it can. Yeah. And I think that, you know, how did I get to where I am? And maybe that comes back to, you know, I'm one of two daughters. My dad was a rugby playing dad, and often we had some close family friends who all had males, boys my age. So he did often, in a very genuinely endearing way, call us, come on, boys, you know, we're going now. And so I grew up, I think, just I didn't realize at the time, with this feeling that I could do whatever I wanted. And it wasn't really that material, whether I was a girl or a boy. So I took that into engineering school, which was largely male.
Yeah.
I took that into Malaysia, where there were very few at that time professional females, definitely Pākehā professional females. And then again into London, where there are a lot more men. So that intrinsic confidence and belief has carried me through the whole way, I think. Mm. So I probably have to thank my dad for that one.
Yeah. What do you think has been some of the biggest shifts or, I guess, changes in industry attitudes towards women, towards gender diversity or representation, and I guess just female leadership?
There's more discussion about it now. Mm. And I think that's the first bit, that it's actually considered and talked about. And so we do have some statistics, and that always helps because it just brings more awareness and visibility. But it is an ongoing discussion and need to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really changed. That used to be something that only people in HR talked about, and they kind of did it in the back room with a bit of a piece of paper and then occasionally came to the exec team to say something, whereas now that's a given that we need to talk about that. So that can only make life better, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think we need to be doing more of to kind of help move that needle? I mean, yes, talking about it is good and kind of having some of the statistics, but, you know, what sort of action would you like to see, or what would you hope?
Yeah.
Very aspirational, but.
And we always talk about two big things that, again, are stats that can get tracked, right? Yes. So people track the gender pay gap and they track the kind of gender and diversity stats. At the payback level, sounds really stupid, I think, but honestly, to close that gap, you just have to pay women the same as you pay men for the same job. It's not that hard. Mm. But I think that where you've got differences of trajectory and people, at the end of the day, you're also running an economic business. Mm. So I understand where they're like, oh, that's too big a jump. We might just do it in two. Mm. But if we're really going to break that cycle, we have to do those things and stop making it a penny counting and actually look at what's right. So that one, kind of simple, does cost money though. And on the other one, I think that is that evolving discussion of just who are our good people, what are they doing? And you'd like to think you get to that point where actually none of those stats count because you've got such a diverse group of people that represent your general constituents that it just is. Mm-hmm. But it does need some tracking for a while until we get there. But I do think it comes back to that. Caring about each and every one of your people in the organisation and knowing what their pathway is and trying to make the most of it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, trying to drill down into, you know, people's pathways and having the open communication, you know, you've got so many people within your organisation, you know, that's quite a hard thing to keep track of or to do, you know. Do you have any kind of words of wisdom or strategies that you've implemented to help create that?
Yeah, and I think that's also been a difference this year with stepping up to be a CEO. That move from I built my whole career on getting stuff done, and that's sometimes much more in the doing than it is in the leading. So for me this year really has been conscious about that as a CEO, my job isn't to do everything or know everything. I need to build the team and rely on people doing their job. So one, that's the trust in the team, but also that my role is probably more about clearing hurdles now than it is about doing things, so enabling other people to be able to do their job. So then when it comes down to how do you know all the people, then you've got to break it down to do all those people around the exec team table know their people? And if they don't, what help did they need to get to know their people? So really try and build that pyramid approach. But one of the things I did do when I started at Smartshares and I loved and I'm going to do again in this year is I set up a series of lunches. Hmm. So there's about 100 people who all work in associated with Smartshares. So we broke that down into 10 groups of 10. And in those first few months I came in, I had 10 lunches internally with those people. And I loved it because it was a really personal chance for them to hear from me and know that I'm a human, not just a title, but also for me to learn who each of those people were. And it was also great because we had people across our business who hadn't met each other or worked together before. So it was just building more connections.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, really creating a relationship building and that collaboration within the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So I guess you did start, you know, your role at Smartshares only in September last year. What was it that made you excited to join the team? You know, what was it that made you decide to step up as a CEO?
I think combination of right place, right time in a way. So the role really excited me because Smartshares has been through a huge growth trajectory and acquisitions, and it was at a point where it acknowledged it wanted to pause and digest and then reset the strategy to rebuild the business. And for me, I was at a point of my career when I'd been 6 and a bit years at a role. I was looking for another challenge and wondering what that might be. And I try to, in thinking about that, go back to what do I love and what am I good at? And I do love businesses that are needing to reshape or grow. Mm. So that's not necessarily a complete reset, but something where you get to build or add on and add some value rather than just a BAU normal state. So the Smartshares role really appealed because I think that's the stage that the business was in that complemented what I think I bring as my island of confidence. And also it was great timing because I was in the market looking for something new and it was available.
So it sounds like there's going to be some very exciting years ahead for Smartshares.
Yeah.
Are you able to share, you know, some of the key goals or plans for the next 5 years or whatever that time frame looks like?
So I've touched on that digestion part with the acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And then it's setting ourselves up for what we want our position in the market to be. So some of that is around being scalable, not just having scale, and getting more efficient processes that we can really give great client service to our investors, but also have really value-added roles for our people as well inside. So a little bit of that inward and outward focused, it's having a view on being more outward looking and where the market's going and shaping what we want our role in the New Zealand market and ecosystem to be. So definitely you'll see in the next year and into the next 2 years from us far more of a voice and a presence in market to tell our story and start to be a vibrant part of that space in terms of education for people but also the value out of our products. Because I think that there was always time in the market to have market tracking product that's affordable, accessible and flexible for people to be able to invest in. And as investors get in that journey and want to have over the next 5+ years more control and choice, then we want to be positioned to be the provider of that.
So you've touched on a few of the strategies you've already implemented, particularly around the people side of things. Are you able to kind of share a bit more on kind of reaching those goals and what you hope to implement to help get us there?
Yeah. So one of those is obviously we want to set out what that strategy looks like for the business. Mm-hmm. So at the moment what it is more of what I call a strategic direction and a vision. Mm-hmm. So we want to be those things for people, but then how do we chunk that down and bring that back to how do we break that down and do it? So it starts in the simplest level of change from our position where we are today. So what do we want our operating model and our platform to look like? So what tools are we going to use to enable us from a system and software point of view to provide that? So we'll see an internal, it'll be not visible necessarily as much to our external clients, but an internal replatforming. But that will also be visible in terms of more self-service tools online, a portal, et cetera. And then it's tidying up our fund offering so we can look at where we can reduce price, where that is we're able to pass that on to investors, where we can get more efficient economics out of it. And then also around how we're relating to those clients and how can we actively help some of that education journey, which we do a lot in our Superlife brand around corporate workplace savings and KiwiSaver, but also how can we add to that.
So sounds like you're really enjoying your time at Smartshares so far.
I am.
What has been, I guess, the overall most rewarding thing that you've achieved or that you're enjoying at the moment, especially as a CEO, as a leader of a growing organisation?
So it's been 6 months, but I think the bit that's most excited me is actually the people. Yeah. So coming in, obviously a new person comes in, new ideas, that can be challenging and exciting for people. But what I've really loved is everyone's desire and willingness to be part of change. So, and that's really refreshing. It sounds like easy, but lots of places aren't like that. And so the people that we've got, the culture, the diversity of groups in terms of roles that they do, but also backgrounds, is quite a cool place actually.
Mm, cool. And I guess, do you have any advice for other women who are aspiring to take on more leadership roles, whether it may be CEO or just stepping up at their organisations?
So I think I come back to that back yourself idea, and you talked about lean in. You know, I talk about that island of competence. Be sure of yourself and what you add. And sometimes that sounds easy to do, but it's not always. I think also within an organisation, it's good to find a network of people. Now, that might just be people that you do projects with or you work with on a daily basis, but trying to have some of that conversation that might just be a coffee a month or a lunch every quarter where you actually just talk about, oh, how's it going? What do you want to do? What about next? So that you're putting some time to that conversation of where might you be ready for other opportunities and then being able to help each other. Lots of it, I think, is when you say it out loud, then you have to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you keep just thinking it inside, right, yeah, oh, yeah, I'll get to that later.
Perfect. Cool. Anna, so before we wrap up, we always end our kind of podcast with a little quick fire round.
Yep.
So it's a bit of fun, some serious, some fun. So first thing that comes to mind, don't think too much about it. So first question, what song is guaranteed to get you up and dancing?
Oh.
There is no wrong answer here.
No. Oh, I think it's probably YMCA.
Oh, yeah.
My daughter loves it.
Okay. A bit different, but yeah, I can see it's a crowd pleaser. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, I don't know if I'd listen to my advice. I think in a way, I kind of had to go through motherhood to learn some more patience and a little bit more flexibility. So if I was going to give advice to my younger self, that's what I'd tell me. I don't think I'd change until I felt it, but might be worth saying at least.
Yeah, sometimes you got to live through your mistakes, right?
Yeah. You know,
challenging females, right?
And look, we don't all love change, I don't think, right? And so sometimes you have to understand why or just be faced with no other option but to change, which definitely was patience in my children. And then you just come out the other side and you have made the change.
Perfect. If you could go on holidays anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Oh, we have a place down by the Rotorua Lakes that I've grown up with, and my mum's been going there since she was born, so 75 years. And that's always been, when we've lived in New Zealand, our summer destination. So it's not as exotic as flying overseas, but it's pretty awesome because it's got such a family connection in there, and it's a place of real kind of relaxation and enjoyment of the water and summertime. I do love summertime.
Yeah. And then last but not least, what's your favourite inspirational quote?
Oh, so we've used one a lot at the moment at Smart Shares. My team's probably bored of it, but we talk a lot about faster alone but further together. And so about that, creating that team and where we want to go is the big picture and working together towards it. But the one I also have loved for a while and I do use on my children too is the will has to exceed the skill.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like both those quotes actually.
It's useful in a lot of situations.
They both make you think as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. It's been really great to get to know you better. Really appreciate you joining us on today's podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
The information provided in this podcast is a guide and is intended for general information purposes only. The information is not investment advice. The information should not be relied upon as a substitute for detailed advice from a professional advisor. The podcast may contain opinions or forward-looking statements, and actual results may vary from what is expressed in this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the presenter or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of NZX. NZX Limited is not liable for any loss suffered through relying on the information in this podcast. NZX makes no warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information in this podcast. All intellectual property rights in the content of this podcast are owned or used under license by NZX, and NZX's written consent is required to use, redistribute, or reproduce the content, or use it to create other works.